We'll do some time travel in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. From the timeless studios of the Radio Amateur Information Network, I'm Will Rogers, K5WLR, with this RAIN replay. This week we bring you an interview RAIN founder-producer Hap Holly, KC9RP, conducted in the summer of 1987, almost 3 years before the RAIN acronym Radio Amateur Information Network was coined. We'll bring you a postscript to this RP report at the end of this look at the NCDXF IARU International Beacon Project.
Well, it's that time of the week again for my California schedule on 20 meters, but I don't know where the band's going, so probably better turn the rig on first of all. And let's see, punch out 1, 4, 1, 0, 1. Enter. Well, it sounds like the Hawaiian beacon. What beacon, you ask? Well, it's one of 9 propagation beacons set up by the Northern California DX Foundation, based at Stanford University in Palo Alto, California. Still puzzled? Well, this RP report will unravel the mystery behind the 20-meter beacon network. Thanks to Al Lotzi, W6RQ, who handles all correspondence for the beacons. Licensed since 1932, Lotzi has been an advisor for the Foundation's beacon project since 1982. I recently caught up with Al, and he elaborated on the concept and inner workings of the 20-meter beacon network.
This thing was the idea of Dr. Mike Ballard of the Stanford Radio Propagation Lab. Dr. Ballard is a real for sure scientist who is also a radio amateur, W6QYT. Mike Ballard has for a long time been interested in developing systems to do instantaneous radio propagation evaluation. If you can dig back in your old QSTs, March 1952, page 11, Mike Ballard has an article on instantaneous prediction of propagation paths. That was a complex sounding system. He thought the amateur should set up a simple, inexpensive system where any of us could sit here with nothing but a receiver and get a feeling for what is the propagation to many parts of the world at any one time. And he thought up this concept of power stepping beacons. The current beacon network consists of 9 20-meter beacons. They're all on 14,100 kilohertz, crystal controlled, and they're pretty close. The beacons operate sequentially in a time sequence. Every 10 minutes, each beacon has a 1-minute time slot. So you watch your clock. If you have a digital clock, you have a fine feeling for what the beacon network is doing. When you tune in 14,100, get a good beat note. When your clock reads 00, like 0500, first you hear 4U1UN slant B. He sends QSD 4U1UN beacon. Then he sends one dot, holds his key down 9 seconds, transmitting at 100 watts. Then he goes did-it, holds the key down for 9 seconds, transmitting with 10 watts. Did-it-it, holds the key down 9 seconds, and transmits with 1 watt. Then he gives did-it-it-it, and holds the key down for 9 seconds with 100 milliwatts, 1/10 of a watt. Then did-it-it-da-da-da, 4U1UN, slant B. Immediately, that beacon is followed by W6WX, slant B. The 4U1UN is in the UN building in New York City. It gets to have a 4U1 call sign because it's not licensed by the FCC. W6WX is in the 1-minute slot. It's on the campus at Stanford University. KH60 slant B is at Kaneohe, Hawaii, on the northeast coast of Oahu. The fourth one, JA2IGY, Mount Osama, Japan. The fifth one, 4X6TU slant B, is at Tel Aviv University, Tel Aviv, Israel. The next one is OH2B at the Technical College near Helsinki, Finland. followed by CP-3B on the island of Madeira. Next is ZS-6DN slant B, Pretoria, South Africa. And the last one, the ninth one, is LU-4AA, just north of Buenos Aires, Argentina. There was to have been a tenth one. The equipment was shipped to Colombia 2 years ago and has never arrived. Something's going to be done about that. Anyway, we set up our network of 9 power-stepping beacons operating in sequence. The heart of this thing, the thing that makes the tells the beacons when to fire and how to reduce their power, was a design by Dr. Dave Leeson, W6QHS. Dr. Leeson, again, is another one of these real-for-sure scientists. He founded and operates his own big company down in Silicon Valley, but is still an active radio amateur. The keying system, the little thing that sends the call signs, does the timing in that, was developed by Jack Curtis, K6KU. You know of Curtis keyers. Now, the late Cam Pierce, K6RU, was the assembly engineer of the whole thing. He put all the units together, built the antenna systems, built everything, the networks and all, boxed them all up and mailed them away, and passed away soon after. We miss Cam. The whole project would have continued moving further. We would have had more things going today if we still had Cam. Well, now we've set up a very simple, inexpensive system for just anybody to listen on 14100 and hear it, the 9 beacons, 24 hours a day, every day. Now, you'll say, well, gee, the beacon sends its call letters in code awfully fast. They send its call letters at 22 words a minute. How would I ever know what I was listening to? You just watch the clock. Before U1UN starts out when your clock reads 0, W6WX starts out when your clock reads 1, that is 0111213141. The K86 in Hawaii when your clock reads 2. The JA when your clock reads 3, come on like that. So all you have to know is which time slot do I hear a beacon. Even though you can't read his call letters, you can tell it's the beacon because the way he sends his row of 9-second dashes, each one diminishing in power. If you get a good signal from him, you can use those power levels to calibrate your S-meter. Now, someone wanted to know, how do you keep the clocks all set right? Well, I wish we could all the time. We have a crystal-controlled clock, but we do have power failures at some remote locations. We supplied 12-volt lantern batteries with all the units so that the clock assembly can continue to run on the battery. At some places, Madeira Island particularly, they have commercial power failures frequently. We couldn't even keep up the lantern battery, so we provided Madeira with a large 12-volt NICAD battery and a charger. We've had very few maintenance problems. For the first few years, we had one resistor went out in each of the power supplies. The beacon units, the transmitters, are Kenwood TS-130s. We have the TS-130 and the controller unit connected to it. And the power supply for the TS-130, and that's the whole thing. The Kenwood power supply had one resistor that went out in each unit. It was a 2-watt resistor. We mailed all the beacon trustees a 10-watt wire wound to replace it, and that problem is gone. The KH-60 beacon has had problems with TVI. A beacon is no different than any other transmitter. And Bob Jones has rigged up a wonderful antenna there. He's had to put up a high dipole fed with an open wire line and a lot of filtering so that that beacon can continue to run without TVI.
You're listening to an RP report on the 20-meter beacon network. We'll be back in 9 seconds.
Thank you.
You're listening to the W6WX Beacon, one of the nine stations comprising the 20-meter Beacon Network, operating 24 hours a day on 14.100 megahertz. Al Lotze, W6RQ, handles all correspondence concerning this network. He has received more than 650 letters from 35 countries, some inquiring about the beacons, others simply containing signal reports.
I have one Czechoslovakian amateur who has a homemade direct conversion receiver. It's the simplest receiver you can make. I think he's heard six of the nine beacons so far with a direct conversion receiver. There was one fellow in Pennsylvania. He had an interesting address in Pennsylvania. And he had some numbers after his name. Now, most of the shortwave listeners do have a letter and a number after their name. All the European shortwave listeners are licensed, and the government gives them these numbers. Well, I had this fellow in Pennsylvania who had numbers behind his name, and he said, when you write to me, make sure you put these numbers behind my name. Then one day I got a letter from him, and he said, I can no longer send you reports on the beacon reception, because the warden has taken away my shortwave receiver. With regard to the location of the beacons itself, the 4U1 UN is in the UN building. The trustee there is Dr. Max de Henseler. He is the chief cartographer for the United Nations. Max de Henseler is a Swiss amateur. He has an HB9 call. The antenna at 4U1 UN is just a 20-meter vertical with four radios on the roof of the UN building there. You'll notice sometime, if you hear 4U1 UN working 20-meter phone on a contest weekend, every time the clock comes up 00, the operator will say, wait, beacon interference, because the beacon comes up on the same band. The W6WX beacon is installed in a little hut up on a hill on the Stanford campus. It's about a quarter of a mile from a 200-foot parabolic dish. This hut is going to have to be moved if and when they build the Reagan Library. The antenna on W6WX is what we really plan to have on all the beacons. It's a double loop. Looks like one element of a quad, that is two of the rhombic-looking things at right angles. That is a double loop, which gives you some gain in the horizontal direction. It's an omnidirectional antenna, but really has a little better lobe than you get just from a 20-meter vertical. We provided the equipment to fabricate one of these antennas with each shipment of the beacons. But really, if you have any winter storms at all, you lose this antenna. Beacon trustees have opted for something simpler. The antenna at KH60 had to be tailored for its present location. KH60 is Bob Jones. He was teaching at a college in Honolulu for a while and had the beacon at the college. Then he just finally up and retired and took the beacon home with him. Found that at his home in Kaneohe, that's on the northeast slope of the island of Oahu, the beacon caused intolerable television interference. So he had to get an antenna up out of the way. He wanted to get away from the vertical. At the present time, he has a plain 20-meter dipole center-fed with an open wire line, a Johnson matchbox, and a low-pass filter in the coax cable. And the antenna is oriented pretty much to give him a signal toward the west coast of the United States and to Europe. At JA2IGY, they have their beacon mounted in a little concrete building at a location where there's some other VHF equipment and the like. It's on a hill called Mount Asama, south of Tokyo, about 300 feet high or so, not a real high peak, but it has a clear shot in all directions. And they have on the roof there and off the shelf a three-band vertical. It's an interesting thing in that it has trapped radials. It's a 20, 15, and 10-meter vertical with trapped radials for the three bands, and it seems to work quite well for the 20-meter beacon. At Madeira, we had a 20-meter vertical, But the amateurs in Northern Europe want to be able to hear CT3. They want to know when they get an opening down there. And they opted for a dipole oriented to give them the lobe toward Northern Europe. ZS6DN has the vertical. LU4AA has a 20-meter vertical also. Some interesting propagation things here. I get these reports from all over the world, and it's amazing how people close together hear different things. Outside of the United States, most of the reports on beacon reception come from Germany. There must be at least 20 or so German amateurs have been involved in this. And there's one of them in particular who hears many more beacons at many more power levels than the others. This has been a very interesting observation. He has no particularly better equipment. He is not on top of a big high hill. I myself have heard all 9 of the beacons when it is running in its 100 milliwatt power level. Now, lean back and think about that. 1/10 of a watt to a 20-meter vertical. 1/10 of a watt. You know, one thing this makes you stop and think about are radio amateur handbook, let's say, concept of how your signal takes off, bounces off the ionosphere, bounces back down to the earth, bounces back up the ionosphere, bounces back down again, let's say a 3 or 4 hop. How in the ever-loving world can I hear 1/10 of a watt to a vertical being reflected 5 or 6 times, and you know it's got to lose 10 dB per bounce? When you stop and make a simple pass at explaining this, you realize that there's a great deal more to propagation than this hop, hop, hop thing. We're proving right off that there has to be more things such as ducting, trapping, or very low-loss ways in which these signals are getting to us. Incidentally, we sure appreciate when regular amateur contacts don't try to usurp our beacon frequency. We have a lot of problem nowadays with the packets. The packets don't listen. They just get on and transmit. I understand in Europe, though, the problem is worse than it is here. At the present time, we're working with the IARU, the International Amateur Radio Union. We deal with Alan Taylor, G3DME, who's the beacon coordinator. And the foundation is offering to do a great deal of work to help Alan set up a similar time-sharing, power-stepping beacon network on 15 meters and 10 meters. Now, conceivably, we will have sites where we will have 3 beacons, 20, 15, and 10 meters, all operating simultaneously the same way. It takes a bit of funding, $1,500 a piece. It costs us $1,500 to buy the 130, supply the controller, the antenna network and those things, and ship it.
Al Lotzi, W6RQ, a solar observer for decades and considered by some for years the heart of the Northern California DX Foundation until his passing in 2000. As a postscript to this 1987 RP report, produced by Hap Holly, KC9RP, there are now 18 IARU international beacons that transmit sequentially on 5 HF bands, 14.1, 18.1, 21.150, 24.930, and 28.200 megahertz. For a current list of these 18 beacons, go to www.ncdxf.com. That's ncdxf.com. The RAIN report is copyright 1990-2016 RAIN. All rights reserved. I'm Will Rogers, K5WLR, bidding you all very 73 from the Radio Amateur Information Network. Available on therainreport.com, sporadically at The Rain Report on Twitter, and via iTunes.